All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we are very happy to have Peter Boyle joining us, who is a long-time peace activist, member of Socialist Alliance, and also is a regular contributor to Green Left. And Peter Boyle actually just recently wrote an article for Green Left titled "The War Madness of Stationing US B-52 Bombers in Australia," and this article kind of responded to the United States' plan to deploy 6 nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to the Tyndall Air Base near Darwin. Now, Peter, I would like to sort of start off, I guess, the kind of discussion of, I guess, what are your sort of initial kind of comments and your analysis of this kind of plan by the United States and their deployment of nuclear-capable B-52 bombers in bombers within Australia.
Hi, Jacob. Thanks for having me on the program. I think the first thing I felt was a sense of shock at how far gone the process of the war drive and its selling to the Australian public has gone. Because if you think of it, this decision to start preparing to base up to 6 B-52 strategic bombers, which are, you know, one of the primary ways, apart from missiles, that nuclear weapons could be deployed, came without any notification, formal notification by the government to the public, not even to the parliament. This process had been going on. Obviously, a deal had been made in secret. And the only way that the Four Corners journalists discovered it was through a process of discovery of U.S. documents. And they actually, you know, found out that there was this plan to build hangars in the Tyndall Air Force Base in the Northern Territory to house these things. The second thing that was shocking about it was the justification for this, as the program laid out, came from a string of neoconservative arms industry and U.S. military-funded American think tanks. They all talked about this, you know, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the Center for New American Security, the American Enterprise Institute, an infamous right-wing think tank funded by Charles Koch, climate denier, billionaire, right-wing, and the RAND Corporation, funded primarily by the U.S. military. And there's all these people they interviewed, and they're all talking up, you know, war with China. And, of course, it's presented in a very jaundiced way. It's presented as a war that sparked over the Chinese, you know, the future Chinese invasion of Taiwan. And there's no discussion about, you know, hello, what's the basis for this? You know, is this a real prospect? That is rushed through. We're straight into a discussion of, you know, war games that they've carried out, simulations of war. And the conclusion of this, and in fact, this is a pitch. You could say it's a direct pitch by the U.S. military and by the arms industry, is for Australia to become an even bigger, you know, effectively land-based aircraft carrier and port for U.S. military power in the Asia Pacific.
Hi, Peter. It's Sue here. Just another question. I was listening to an interview with one of the government ministers about these US B-52 bombers, and they were trying to justify it on the basis, oh, yes, they have the potential to be nuclear-armed, but they won't be nuclear-armed. I mean, to me, this smacks of, you know, you open the door an inch and then you have to open it by a metre or something or more, just to try and lull us into a false sense of security about the nuclear element. So there's, obviously if these are nuclear-capable B-52 bombers, and then this combined with the nuclear submarines, which they still seem determined to buy, this really starts to take Australia way down the nuclear path. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, clearly, first of all, as you say, you know, it's today they will say perhaps these are not carrying nuclear weapons right now. But, you know, once they're based here, once the whole setup is deployed, and the setup is one of, you know, interoperability, you know, they're basically ready to fight a big war together, Australia, United States. Now, all they need to do is to, at any point, put out some, you know, apparent justification for a further step up, a further escalation, and then they say, okay, well, you know, in this situation, we have to let them be nuclear armed. The other thing, Sue, you remember from back in the day, when we were actually fighting and nearly winning a total ban on U.S. military ship visits, you know, which was won in New Zealand out of the anti-war movement decades ago. You remember back then, there was this policy by the United States Navy, neither to confirm or deny that they were carrying nuclear weapons. So that's another element I think you have to take into account. How the hell do we know they're telling the truth?
Well, as you just mentioned before in the interview, the fact that this deal for these bombers to be stationed, nuclear-capable bombers to be stationed at Tyndall Air Base, was not reported anywhere, and journalists had to find out about it through a paper trail of US documents. So it means that Australians won't be notified if there's nuclear weapons on board. And we also know the secrecy for, you know, anti-war activists and peace activists going way back from when there were big campaigns around these issues, that it was very difficult to find out what was happening at Pine Gap, for example, where many activists got arrested over the years for protests outside Pine Gap. But it was clouded in utmost secrecy.
Totally. There's so much secrecy in this whole business. And I think it draws attention to, I think, an important campaign that's going on in Australia, and that's the Australian War Powers Reform. And what this highlights is that Australia is one of those countries where the power to launch war is not subject to a vote in Parliament. Now, even in the United States, technically, such a decision has to be taken to Congress. So every U.S. president over the last few years has found ways and means to sort of maneuver between this obligation. But, you know, they have the formal obligation. In so many days, they're supposed to put it to Congress. In Australia, it is left to the executive, to the government, to make that decision. And therefore, there's this whole area where, you know, in the so-called democracy, there is no democratic decision-making process. There's no democratic oversight. And the entire military area, you know, as you know, is covered in secrecy. And that famous phrase that the members of the previous Morrison government used to say, you know, we're not going to go into detail about this, was extended into government statements and media media conferences about refugees. Now, if they're not going to tell us about things associated with refugees, do you think they're going to tell us all the detail voluntarily about their war plans in the region? Because make no mistake, the fundamental issue here is not some sort of concern about Taiwan. And yes, you know, I think most people in the world would support, as we do, the idea that Taiwan should never be forcibly integrated into China. It's, you know, it's a horrible prospect. That's fine. But that is not the real issue here. That is not the real reason for this huge escalation in the preparations for war with China. because at the heart of this, going way back to under the Obama regime's pivot to Asia, and even before then, the real objective of all this military build-up is very simple, and it has been stated in numerous documents: to preserve U.S. and allied military supremacy in the Asia Pacific. That's the objective. The rest of it is actually excuse, it's justification, it's propaganda to sell that objective.
And I want to go into kind of like the next kind of aspect of the guest this discussion, and I think it's kind of important that we actually, you know, even at 3CR and within Green Left, that we actually have to have a response to this, because there's very much kind of like a conscious sort of campaign, you know, by the ruling class within Australia and the United States to basically, you know, this anti sort of China to develop kind of anti-China kind of sentiment in Australia, and to kind of normalize this idea that we want, that we would have to go at war with China. And I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of response to, you know, your political kind of response to that, and, you know, how we can actually challenge that kind of that sentiment that is clearly being drummed up by a ruling class.
I think exposing the real objectives of the military build-up is one part of it. We have to keep reminding people not just to fall for the argument that this is all about helping defend little Taiwan from big aggressive China. We've got to challenge that argument, because that's the way they're currently framing it. Now, you know, that's the most successful way. Back in the time of the Trump administration, the U.S. president there fielded a different kind of argument. You know, a more overtly racist argument, trying to blame China for deliberately spreading COVID-19. You know, that level. And it is not to say that some of that kind of outright racist argumentation didn't have some purchase in Australia. It did. Not very far from where I live in Sydney, outside the Chinese consulate, there was an incident of one of these raving right-wing lunatics out there screaming, cracking a whip at people coming past. And, you know, it was all about, you know, evil China who had, you know, developed the Wuhan virus. You know, and there was a period, I think you probably saw it in Melbourne as well, where, you know, right-wingers were going around putting graffiti up on the wall about the Wuhan virus. So there's that. So the naked racist anti-Chinese campaign going on. But, of course, the most successful argument, particularly in the wake of the war in Ukraine, or Russia's invasion of Ukraine, is to use this prospect of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan as an excuse for the military buildup by Australia and the United States, and the strengthening, the deepening of the war alliances between them, including, you know, the deal, the AUKUS deal to get nuclear-powered submarine. So I think we have to take this up. And we also need to start rebuilding the anti-war and peace movement in this country. Now, we know they're at a relatively low ebb. The size of the protests that these organizations have called around the country recently, particularly to address the AUKUS deal, has been only in the hundreds. But for people, and I think Sue as well as myself, who have been through anti-war struggles from the Vietnam War and on, we have seen the anti-war movements rise and fall. And very often the preparation, the critical preparation for the next major upsurge of anti-war sentiment is in the period before. So it's important to nurture these alliances and to try and build them up, because a big fight needs to be had. In Australia, you know, one of the great things today in politics, and I was reminded of this when I went to the Sydney Vigil for Justice for Cassius Turvey yesterday, was it? Yeah. And day before yesterday. And the great thing is that the new generation of First Nations activists constantly remind people, you know, using the term the colony, they remind people that our state apparatus, our government, is not ours. It's theirs. It's not only theirs, it is imperialist. It is the government of the war makers, the government of the exploiters. It is the government of the tiny group of wealthy people who currently dominate and exploit the world economically. And the military aspect is just another aspect of this. Economics, by another means, is how the imperial war machine operates. And that's what we're talking about. That's what we're up against. And I think we can popularize this, and we have to popularize this idea if we are to stop, you know, a very dangerous race to war.
All right. Thanks for that, Peter. We're kind of running a bit out of time, and I guess I wonder if you kind of had any sort of final comments you'd like to add.
Just a point of information for the previous pre-recorded interview you did. The Malaysian general elections are coming up on November 15, because I think that was the date that you were missing. Thanks very much for having me on today.